Now, I wonder if you know what this is. Does anyone here not know what this is? When I was at school, I didn't get many of these. But it's not just a tick, it's more than a tick. Actually, this is magic. I don't know if you know this. This is magic. Here is a magic thing for you. Magic is real. You can take a $10 t-shirt, and if you put that on it, it goes up to $100. Just like that. It's magic. The other thing this can do is it can pull teenagers. It's astonishing. You can't walk past a shop with that, and teenagers don't get sucked into it. And actually, they should invent broccoli with this on it or something. But in case you don't know what I'm talking about, yes, it's called the swish, swish, swoosh. It is the Nike emblem, and it's famous, and I'm sure you know what it is. Now, here's the thing I want to bring up. Do you know what that word Nike means? Do you know what the word Nike means? Some of you do. It comes from the Greek word, nikao, which means to conquer. It means to overcome. Conquer, overcome. Can be used as victory, but more like overcome, conquer. And it comes from this lady. A lady invented this. There she is for you. That's the Greek goddess of conquering, Nikao. She is the symbol of conquest and victory. Now, all of this flows out, and we're going back a very long way. You can tell that's very old, you know. All of this comes out of the Roman civilization. Now, you know, half of you switch off when you get history boring. But no, really, the Roman civilization was astonishing. You had a civilization, and its core business was to conquer. That was its core business. The entire Roman civilization was built on conquest and victory. And those of you who are learned and read Asterix, you'll know this. In Asterix, you remember wherever Caesar goes? What does he say? Veni, vidi, vici. I came, I saw, I conquered. Except for one small little village that held out against the abominable Romans. But anyway, here's the point. The entire, do you remember when Britain was great? Great Britain, a couple of hundred years ago. God save our noble queen. Send her out victorious, happy and glorious. That's the concept that was in Rome way back when. Roman civilization was based on conquer. Now, it's into that atmosphere. Just listen. Into the atmosphere of this very powerful civilization that had conquered the world, a carpenter was born. And that's not unusual. He was born in a remote, far-flung nowhere land, like, you know, being born in Yanchep or something. It just like nowhere land. He grew up with no wealth. No family connections, probably grew up without a dad. And this little carpenter, in this milieu, this the atmosphere of conquest and Caesars and pomp and generals, this carpenter ended up being horribly, brutally crucified, naked, humiliated. I mean, you only have to compare Caesar's laurel wreath, you know. He had this, which meant to the conqueror. It was given to the victor, the games, the last man standing, you know, like PUBG or something. And compare that to Jesus, who was hung up with nothing on, and he had a crown of thorns around his head. Now, here comes the surprise. All of that's like, well, here's the surprise. Today, no one is afraid of the Romans. Emperor or the Roman civilization. But I'll tell you this, Christians, we gathered, I don't know if you heard when we started what Cam said, we are gathering in the name of Rome. Oh, no, wait, what? Who are we gathering? Ah, yes, we're gathering in the name of that carpenter, Jesus. Christians worship him as the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And you might be sitting there saying, I think you Christians have got the wrong guy. You might be sitting there and go, I don't. Now, before you laugh us off and think we're a bunch of do-gooders, you need to explain to yourself how it came to be that this crucified carpenter conquered Rome without lifting a sword. How did he do it? We all understand how Islam spread. This is true. This is acknowledged by all parties. Islam spread through violence. Everyone knows this. And it's true, and it still does. Biblical Christianity, not Roman Catholic Christianity, which is a different version of Christianity, biblical Christianity has never spread through violence, ever. Jesus claims to have conquered the world. Here's what he says in John 16. Jesus said, I've said these things to you, that in me you may have peace. In the world you'll have tribulation, but take heart. I have Nikao, Nike. I have overcome the world. So the big question I would like to ask Jesus, how did you overcome the world? How'd you do it? Because you didn't pick up a sword. How did you do it? And the answer is through suffering. What Jesus is going to show us is that Christians conquer not by avoiding suffering, but patient endurance through suffering. This is what it says in 1 John 5. Everyone who's been born of God overcomes the world, conquers. And this is the victory that has overcome the world, our bombs, our guns, our strength, our might, none of that. Our faith, persevering, patient endurance. Who is it that overcomes the world? Except the one who has faith, who believes that Jesus is the Son of God. Throughout the Bible, there are those who have attempted to grasp things for themselves. Remember Adam and Eve? Go for gold. You know, reach out, grab it, take hold. And there are Jesus and Christians who say, wait for God to give it to you. Be patient. Endure. Someone this week burnt. It's not an act I agree with at all. Someone this week burnt the Quran in Sweden, and they're still rioting. The police have admitted it's out of control. Huge riots. If you go into the heart of Perth and you burn a Bible, I'll guarantee you there'll be no riots. Because Christians don't need to fight for our God. He'll take care of himself. He's big enough. The smaller your God, the more you'll have to fight for him. The bigger your God, the more you can be patient and endure. And this is how Christians endure. Look at what it says in Romans. This is how we conquer. What will separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or danger or sword? I am scared of all those things. Especially when I'm preaching and the word naked comes up. I'm terrified. But listen to how Christians conquer. As it is written, for your sake we are being killed all the day long. That does not sound like conquering to me. We are regarded as sheep to be slaughtered. That does not sound like a pack of winners to me. No. Can you believe it? In all these things, we are more than Nikael. We are more than conquerors through him who loved us. The way to conquer is patient endurance. Now, if that's all true, what will beat Christians? What will conquer Christians? And it's very simple. If our hearts turn from God if we are enticed to love the world. If we are drawn away from God, it's then that we are defeated. The heart is not big enough for more than one love. And all our loves flow from that one love. Look at what it says in 1 John. Do not love the world. See this, as you all sit in front of me and as I stand here, the great temptation this week is not a suicide bomber. No one in this whole building this week had a gun pointed at them and told to deny Jesus. But every single one of us this week were tempted to fall in love with Perth and the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. There's not enough space in here. It gets too squished. You can only have one overriding love in your heart at a time. Now, the reason we're doing all of this is because that's the message to the church at Thyatira today. To Thyatira, guard this little thing with all your heart. Guard your heart, which is a verse in Proverbs. Keep your heart with all diligence. Keep it. This is where you will get conquered. What can they do to your body? It was fading away anyway. No offense. But what happens here is what will keep you safe. So let's go through it quickly. It's not difficult. To Thyatira, keep your heart with all diligence. For those of you who are visiting today, our 4 points are the way each of the letters are constructed. And it always begins with the Christ being described in every letter. And so we begin today. And in every case, it's different. Christ is described in a way suitable to the church he's writing to. And in this case, it is the Christ who conquers, which is why we're thinking about Nike and all those sorts of things. The Christ who conquers. Look at verse 18. And to the angel of the church in Thyatira, write the words of the Son of God, who has eyes like a flame of fire and whose feet are like burnished bronze. Now, the minute you read that, it's actually quite surprising. Because did you see how Jesus is called the Son of God? The words of the Son of God. Well, that is a surprise because nowhere else in the book of Revelation is he called that. It's the only place in the book of Revelation he's called this. So it stands out. Why is John calling Jesus? We know he is the Son of God. That's not a surprise. But why is John calling him that? Why has he got eyes like a flame of fire? Why is his feet like burnished bronze? What's going on here? Well, on the one hand, there is a dig, an apologetic at the local gods. And so in Thyatira, the local god, the coolest of all the gods, because there's always a few, was a guy called Apollo Terimaneus. And I have practiced to say that because I can't do M's and N's together. So his name is Apollo Terimaneus. Okay, look it up. And his title was Son of God. He was the son of Zeus, you know. So it's Apollo, that name. The Son of God. And in Thyatira, the local industry, like Caratha or something like that, was metalworks. Thyatira was famous for its metalworks, its blast fiery furnaces, and it was almost famous for its metal workers' guild. So when you read verse 18, what's the picture you get? You get the picture of some conqueror, get this, who looks like he's just stepped out of a refinery. You know, he's the Son of God, eyes like a flame of fire, and feet like this glowing, furnacely polished, burnt, molten bronze, you know. He looks like he's just stepped out of a furnace. And he has. He has. Because this picture, like all the pictures in the book of Revelation, and we know that all of the book of Revelation are pictures, this picture is taken from Daniel chapter 3. We don't have time to go there in your growth groups. You'll read it. I've written some notes there for you. But if you go to Daniel chapter 3, who knows what happened? The same context as Thyatira. What happened was the Nebuchadnezzar put up, he made this god, made out of this huge god, out of the furnace. And it melted. It was a metal god, gold and bronze. And he put it up and he said, everyone has to worship my god that I've put up over there. And Daniel and his friends said, no, we're not going to worship that god. Actually, it wasn't, it was his three friends. We're not going to worship that god over there. So then Nebuchadnezzar said, well, if you're not going to worship that god, I'm going to throw you into the fiery furnace, probably where I made that god, you know? And which god, and listen to Daniel chapter 3, and which god is able to save you in a fiery furnace? Which god? And the answer is, of course, no god can do that. And so he throws Daniel's three friends into the fiery furnace. And that word fiery furnace is repeated again and again in Daniel chapter 3. He throws them in, and you know the story, I hope you do. And as he's looking, he says, wait a minute, didn't we throw three men into the furnace? Why can I see four? And the fourth, listen to the language, and the fourth is like a son of God. Same language. And so then he calls them out and they come out and, you know, even their shoelaces aren't singed or anything, and they're saved. What's the message? Is that there is a God who can save his people, watch this, through suffering, who is with his people in suffering. He walks with them. And Revelation chapter 2 verse 18 is that picture for the church at Thyatira, that your God is a God who saves through suffering. And he's not far away saying, hey guys, I'm sipping cocktails, just keep going down there. He's with them in their persecution. And he has eyes of a flame of fire. He can see what's on their hearts. That's the picture of Jesus we get in verse 18. And so the lesson for us is the way to conquer is to patiently endure. I don't know, really I don't, what it cost you to be a Christian. Look, all over the world it costs people houses and confiscations and prison. But we're in Perth. What does it cost us? Well, I don't know, but I can tell you stories in this church. I know of one guy in this church whose brother came out the closet and married another man. And that caused him months of grief. Should I go to the wedding? Shouldn't I? He knows I don't agree with homosexuality, but I still love him. He's my brother, you know? And the whole family was like on edge because they're all cool with it, but the silly, those Christians are so difficult. And, you know, and wow, he went through the furnace for quite some time. I know someone else who became a Christian in our church, and their entire family are not Christians. And they think she's joined a cult, you know. They think she's been brainwashed, and they're worried about her. And that's tough. But I suspect in Perth that what it's going to cost you is just a few pleasures. You might have to not get the car you could have got, because you want to serve and support the church. You might not get the house you want to. You've definitely lost beach time. Even now. This thing's starting to get warm at Malalu right now. Anyway, you lose. You know, those are the things that cost us in Perth. I don't know. But here's what you need to know. Whatever it is, Jesus is with you. He walks with his people. And he can bring them through unscathed from the fires of persecution. So that's who Jesus is in the letter to Thyatira. the Christ who conquers. That's the picture they get. Now, he begins by commending those who faithfully bear witness to him in Thyatira. Look at verse 19. I know your works. I know. He's got eyes of flames of fire. You know, even when it's dark, he can see. He can see everything. I know your works, your love and faith and service and patient endurance, and that your latter works exceed the first. I'm sure you spotted that is exactly opposite to the church in Ephesus, where he says, I know your works, but you've forgotten. Go back to your first works. And I don't have time this morning, but we've already looked at this. Those works are the faithful witnessing to Jesus. And so what he's saying to the church at Thyatira, I know you're still engaged in the world. You're still witnessing for me. The church at Ephesus was doctrinally pure, but they were the frozen chosen. They had withdrawn from where the frozen chosen because of the weather. But they were the frozen chosen because they'd withdrawn from the world. The church at Thyatira haven't withdrawn from the world. They're even more engaged in society, playing footy, tennis, getting involved, getting to know people. But unfortunately, they were compromising. And that's the largest part of this letter. Oops, I went the wrong way. Commends those who faithfully bear witness to him. That's in the wrong place. There. He condemns those. Look what Jesus does. He condemns those who through false teaching are taught to love the things of this world. Ephesus was uncompromised in doctrine because it was withdrawn. And Jesus says, that's bad. Thyatira is engaged. Jesus says, that's good. But they've now compromise. Look at verse 20. But I have this against you, that you tolerate that woman Jezebel, who calls herself a prophetess. Isn't it funny in the church? If you call yourself a prophet, everyone goes, oh, you must be. Not true. Who calls herself a prophetess and is teaching and seducing my servants to practice two things: sexual immorality, and two, to eat food sacrificed to idols. Now, we've looked at these two things before. I'm going to look at it a little bit this morning, but I just want to give you some background. Who, and everyone's thinking this, who's Jezebel? Who is Jezebel? I don't, like all the pictures in the book of Revelation, I don't think there was a woman in the church called Jezebel. Otherwise, this letter is no longer relevant to us because she died about 2,000 years ago. No, it's a picture, but it's not a picture out of nowhere. It's a picture taken from the Old Testament, as usual. And here's where it is. It comes from 1 Kings chapter 21. In the Old Testament, there was a king called Ahab, and he married this woman, Jezebel, and she was bad, really bad. And as it tells us in 1 Kings 21, verse 25, there was none who sold himself to do what was evil in the sight of the Lord like King Ahab, whom Jezebel, his wife, incited. He acted very abominably in going after idols, the same as in the letter to Thyatira. Jezebel is an picture, an embodiment of false teaching that seduces God's people. Jezebel stands for a seductive voice. That's all that it means. Jezebel means that seductive voice that draws God's people away into loving other things. That's all that Jezebel, and if you're a feminist like me, and you're sitting and you're going, why is it always a woman? You know, what's wrong with patriarchal Christian? Why is it always a woman? Because in the Bible, a woman is the epitome of things that draws you, and not just bad things. the epitome of wisdom in the Bible, not a man, it's a woman who calls out and says, follow me. Listen, she's trying to seduce you. She's trying to say, be smart. In the Bible, anything that draws your heart is embodied in a woman, either good or in this case, bad. In Revelation 18, in Revelation 18, this picture is expanded and she turns into a harlot. And wow, it's so descriptive and so clever. Okay, so the two things God's people are seduced are sexual immorality and food sacrificed to idols. So let's think about these things very quickly. And I've summarized it there in the point. Essentially, it's to love the things of this world as a summary. But let's talk about sexual immorality. The world has a seductive voice to Christians. And I don't have time to spend ages on this, but I thought this week the clearest example of this is the voice of the world to high school kids. And I'm only talking like this because I got one, you know. But this week, my daughter showed me a song, for those of you who know, it's called WAP. And I am not telling you what WAP stands for. And she was appalled as well, I was happy to say. Or maybe she was acting, but she seemed appalled. I can't tell you what that song says. I am astonished. Maybe I'm old, but I didn't grow up as a Christian, so I'm not conservative. I'm astonished at the words of that song. I don't know how feminists aren't marching in the streets against that song, because it teaches that women are the worst objects for men's pleasure. It's just so destructive. And then Jezebel Incorporated started a thing called TikTok. You should see it. If your child is not acting like a prostitute, she just isn't cool, okay? And Facebook and Instagram. Jezebel seducing. How is a young teenage girl going to think she is of any worth unless she flashes something or sends a nudie? Otherwise, she'll have no self-worth. Look, you're all saying, oh, he's so cranky. I'm just telling you what it is. This is what this letter's talking about. This Jezebel, this voice that seduces God's people. And I want to tell all the parents here, forget it. You can't guard your child's heart. You can't do it. As a parent, the only thing you can do is regulate their behavior. That's all you can do until they're 16 and the government says you can't even do that. Only Jesus can guard their heart. Only he can do it. And so as a parent, your job is not to raise good children. Your job is to raise Christians. Children, because it is Jesus who can guard their hearts. And if we're going to listen to this letter and resist those who teach sexual immorality, because that's the only thing I'm dealing with at the moment, you're going to have to raise your children to love Jesus and teach them about Jesus. I meet up with parents and they're blown away that their child has gone and done this. I caught my son, they are. And then, do you read the Bible with your child? No. Do you tell him about you? Well, no, because you know, that's Joe Wilson's job. You know, that's the job of the youth department. Oh my. Why are you surprised? The test is, honestly, parent, are you more happy with your child's good grades at school? Or are you more happy that they're going to youth, hearing about Jesus, serving in the church? You decide which one makes you more happy. We're starting a new thing in our church called Gap Year. Talk to Gemma. Where is Gemma? It's dark out there. But you talk to Gemma. She's right up front here. Gap Year is a new program. We're launching at our church. whereby children at the end of year 12, or whenever they finish school, can spend a whole year working at the church. And they'll get trained and taught and discipled. Now, if your child wants to go to Bali or Phuket for a year and grow dreads, that's cool. But I'd say this is better. And this is a great, if your child doesn't know what to do, what a great thing to enroll them into, to ground them for life, to guard their hearts. That's the first thing. She teaches that this false teaching teaches the church to compromise in areas of sexual immorality. The second thing is to eat food sacrificed to idols. And again, this is weird in Perth. When last did you go to Macca's and grab a cheeseburger and think this was given to the god, you know, whatever? I mean, it doesn't really happen. But here's what it means. It means to compromise in order to join in society, especially in business. Think about Thyatira and the metallurgy, the metal people. Think about them. They have this guild, right? And when you go to guild meetings of all your tradies, you know, they have an idol that they worship. And it's the god of that guild, right? And along you come, little Christian, you know, have tools, will travel, and you're ready to do your metal work, you know, and you can weld a bit and that. And you get there, and they're all worshiping this god. And the thing is, if you don't, you can't be part of the guild. And so you lose out financially and economically. And very hard to be a metal worker in Thyatira and not worship the god of the metal people. Now, how does that work in our society? How does that translate to today? Where's that lure to worship false gods in our society? I'm sure, you know, the day you graduated as an accountant, you didn't have to worship a giant calculator, you know, and get Excel tattooed on your right wrist or whatever, you know. So how does it work today? Well, I'll tell you how it works. I haven't worked in Perth. I've always been in ministry in Perth, but back in South Africa, believe it or not, I worked. And one of my clients told me it was becoming impossible to run his, he was more into scaffolding, a construction business because of the corruption. Everybody was bribing the government for contracts. It was stock standard in South Africa. If you don't bribe, you ain't getting the work. And he was a Christian. Duh. So he wouldn't do that. And he was losing work. I this week spoke to my daddy, who lives in South Africa. He does some consulting work. Nowadays, if you're starting to build in South Africa, as you're getting ready and the groundwork, this smart car comes and these guys get out in suits. And basically, unless you pay them, not a single laborer will come to your site. Because they'll go with machine guns. They will kill. And so we're talking about reputable company. I'm not going to give you names. Reputable companies who budget 30,000 rand a month to bribe those people to let the workers come on site. And that's doctor. Now, what would you do as a Christian? I don't know. I don't know. That's the fire. The fiery furnace where the world demands that we eat food sacrificed to idols, that we become like the world in order to engage in the world. Very difficult. What is idolatry? Idolatry is when you look to something to give you what only God can give you. It's where in your heart you treasure something more than God. What is sin? Sin is a disordering of loves. I love kite surfing, and I love the ocean, and I love surfing. But compared to love for God, there ought to be no comparison. And what happens with the church and false teaching in Thyatira is that along comes Jezebel, and through false teaching, she teaches us to love the things of the world. And she teaches us to have your best life now. That's a classical example of false teaching of Jezebel in action. And so Jesus, with eyes of fire, tests and searches hearts. He has feet of blazing bronze to stamp out idolatry. Look at the judgment from verse 21. I gave her time to repent. She refuses to repent of her sexual immorality. Behold, I love the way Jesus gives you time. Probably the world's not going to end tomorrow. So if you're young, you're thinking, yeah, no, I believe, Dwayne. I'm going to be a Christian when I'm very old, 28 or something. Yes, Jesus does give time. Watch out, though. Watch out. Look what he says. I gave her time to repent, but she refuses to repent of her sexual immorality. Behold, I'll throw her onto a sickbed, and those who commit adultery with her, I'll throw into great tribulation, unless they repent of her works. I'll strike her children dead. Well, once again, I don't have time, but all of that language comes out, you guessed it, 1 Kings chapter 21. And if you go to 1 Kings 21, those are the judgments that fell on Jezebel and Ahab and their children. And the reason John uses this language is so that you can look back in history and you can see Jesus is not joking. He's done it before. He will do it again. And then you have the central verse of all the letters. Look what it says there. And all the churches will know that I am he who searches mind and heart. And I will give to each of you according to your works. That is the central verse of the letter to the seven churches. And essentially, Jesus is saying, church, I search the heart. It always comes down to what's on your heart. Always. Why doesn't God let everyone into heaven? We're going to have Q&A afterwards. We always do. And I regularly get, well, why doesn't God just let everyone into heaven? So the popular idea is that God wants everyone to come into heaven. Jesus wants everyone to come in. But there's this bouncer called Peter. And Peter stands at these gates, you know, all the jokes, and you just can't get through Peter. Jesus is behind the gates like Father Christmas, and he's just saying, come, whatever, you know. And Peter's at, well, actually, when you read these verses, you realize there's a different picture. Jesus is the bouncer. He stands at the gates with those eyes of fire, and he searches hearts. And only those who come with hearts on fire for love for God are let in. It's only lovers of God that are let into heaven. Lovers of the world have heaven. Here, now, enjoy it while it lasts. Lovers of God have heaven there. And those are the only ones Jesus lets in. Do you know why? Because in heaven, the central attraction is God. If you sneaked in past Jesus when he wasn't looking, and you were a lover of money, you'd just distract the rest of us. Because we'd be focusing on God, our true treasure, and you'll be going, have you guys noticed these streets are gold? Do you reckon we could chisel a bit? I'm busy, you know? Or if you love sexual immorality and we're all standing there worshiping God, you'll be looking, oh, she's, wonder what she'd look like with no clothes on. We're looking at you, because that God isn't your treasure. Guard your heart with all diligence. And so Jesus lastly promises, you know, the Christ who conquers commends those who faithfully bear witness, condemns those who through false teaching are taught to love the things of the world. Finally, oh, and by the way, that is what Jesus requires of us. I forgot this. Jesus answered, the most important is this. Hear, O Israel, listen. The Lord our God, the Lord is one. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength, because the Lord is one. One love. Remember Bob Marley, I've told you that. One love, one heart. And that's what Jesus requires of us, to love God. And you might be looking at that. Who of you looks at that and says, I think he's asking too much? Do you think he's asking too much? Think about Jesus Christ hanging on that cross and ask yourself how much he loved you. What was Jesus' other loves? When Jesus Christ hung on that cross dying for you, what did he hold back? As he hung on that cross, what did he keep for himself? Obviously, he had a self-storage unit. And as Jesus hung on that cross, he knew his jet ski's safe, car's safe. You know, when I in 3 days' time, I'll get my toys again. They're in the self-storage. No. When he hung on that cross, he demonstrated this. He loved you with everything. He gave up everything for you. And that's why he requires that from us. And he concludes that promising that we will share in his final victory. Here is the concluding promise, like in all the letters. Look what Jesus says. Verse 24, but to the rest of you in Thyatira who do not hold this teaching, your hearts haven't been lured to sexual immorality or compromise with the world for financial gain. You have not called what some call the deep things of Satan. To you I say, and I don't lay on any other burden, don't go conquer the world. Don't go conquer the world. Here's all you have to do. Verse 25, hold fast what you have. Until I come. It's not hard. Who's the oldest person here this morning? It's not, how long have you got to go? Hold fast till I come. It's not so long, people. Not so long to summer. And it's not so long till Jesus comes back. Or we die. Hold on to the end. Look what he says. The one who conquers, who keeps my works to the end, to him I will give authority over the nations. He will rule them with a rod of iron, as when earthen pots are broken in pieces, even as I myself have received authority from my Father. Look what Jesus is saying. In essence, we will share in his final conquest, the final victory. When he comes to reign, we will reign with him. Jesus is saying, if you love me, if you cling to me, when I come back, you will reign with me. Always. I love it. You will get, as a Christian, you will get what's coming to Jesus. It's like a kicker on a footy team. You know this. On a footy team, when the kicker kicks a goal, the Coleman medalist or whatever, when he kicks a goal and you look at the scoreboard, it doesn't say, you know, Josh, another point. It says Eagles. If you're a doctor, you don't know what I'm talking about. But the whole team gets the points. The whole team shares in the victory. And on the grand final day, the medal goes to the player with the most points? No. The team. If you're a Christian, you're wearing the Guernsey. You're wearing the team jumper. Christian, you're wearing the name of Christ. And if you hold on to the end, like in any team, you play your role, whatever it is. Everyone's got different roles. You will share in the grand final victory. And notice verse 28, and I will give him the morning star. What's the morning star? That is Jesus himself. Look what he says, and we'll close with this. Look at what Jesus says in Revelation later on. I think it's 22. Is it? Yeah. 19. Blessed are those who wash their robes so that they may have the right to the tree of life. They may enter the city by the gates outside are the dogs. That just means in Jewish language, the unclean. the sorcerers, the sexually immoral, the murderers, the idolaters, everyone who loves and practices falsehood. I, Jesus, have sent my angel to testify to you about these things for the churches. I am the root, the descendant of David, the bright morning star. I will give you myself. Jesus says, I'll give me to you. Just hold on till I get there. When I come to reign, you who participated with me on earth will get everything. I get everything. Whatever I get, you get. So Christian, the message is this. Guard your heart. Don't let false teachers help you, encourage you, entice you, seduce you to look for your best life now. Don't let them draw you to love the things of the world. If you do, the love of the Father is not in you. Go to a church where you constantly hear about the beauty and the majesty and the loveliness of Jesus, and you are weaned off Perth. If you go to a church where they teach you how to even have more victorious life in Perth, you're in the wrong church. Seek Him. Guard your heart.